It's the TEH Podcast, episode number 239, with Leo Notenboom of AskLeo.com and Gary Rosenzweig of MacMost.com. This week, January surprises, TikTok ban, media shifts, and independent journalism trends.
And we're back for another episode. Hey, Gary, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Hanging in there. Yeah. It is, you know, it seems like January has already been a month long, even though we're not even halfway through. I'm not sure why.
Yeah.
One of those months where everything is happening and yet everything is kind of waiting for something to happen.
Sure. Yes. Which pretty much is what the stuff we're going to talk about. A lot of that is
part of it. Yeah. Let's dive right into that.
So yeah.
What Gary's talking about, of course, is the impending TikTok ban that is scheduled to take effect on the 19th. As we talked about before, nobody has really clarified exactly what that's going to look like. Everybody's assuming that TikTok will just stop working. And in fact, I think that there is a little bit of precedent in that, I believe it's India, TikTok is not allowed. And indeed, that's exactly what happens, right? You get a note that says, oh, sorry, you know, we can't do TikTok here because. So it's interesting. With the 19th coming up, I did notice, I ran into this yesterday. I had a little hard time finding it before the episode, but there is at least a move to try and further delay the ban. It's unclear if that'll happen. If I remember correctly, the bill that's being introduced would delay it for another 270 days. In other words, you know, punt it further down the field.
Much further down, yeah.
And but it's unclear how that happens, if that happens, you know, what just exactly what the steps are.
Yeah, it's very weird because all of the different plans, like, you know, punt it for, you know, the 90 days or the 270 days or whatever. It's just rumors. It's just little.
Yeah.
Somebody saying something. There's not really anything official, right? The current presidential administration isn't saying anything about doing any of that. So.
I've been watching TikTok creators over the last couple of days, I guess. And a lot of them are basically saying goodbye. They're just assuming that when TikTok goes away, that they're going to lose their audience. I don't know if they are necessarily planning on continuing to post on TikTok to everybody else, or if they're just going to assume that, you know, the majority of their audience is American and all their revenue is going to go away, which actually leads into an interesting concept. There are a number of people on TikTok who have made this their career.
Yeah.
I think they didn't plan on it. They more or less stumbled into it where, you know, they were doing some TikToks for fun and they got a lot of engagement, and then TikTok offered their creator plan and all of a sudden they were getting, you know, like job level money. So it actually became a career. This is clearly going to impact them dramatically because none of the alternatives really have that same level of revenue potential, is what it sounds like, because you engage differently on those other platforms. The revenue models may not even be there in some cases. And it's just, you know, these are folks who are actually going to be dramatically impacted if this actually goes into plan. The other thing that they're doing, of course, is making sure to let everybody know which other platforms they're on. Up until just a couple of days ago, the platforms that I heard the most often were Instagram and YouTube, the ones that are YouTube Shorts typically, because those are at least in format. They support kind of sort of being able to do the same kinds of things you do on TikTok. They're established. There's large audiences out there. Honestly, a lot of the people on TikTok probably already have Instagram accounts and YouTube accounts. So it's more a matter of changing behavior than it is trying to get them to establish accounts.
Yeah.
But there have been a couple of alternative apps that have been getting mentioned that I hadn't heard of before. One of them is Lemon8, which I've heard conflicting stories on because apparently it's owned by ByteDance, the people that own TikTok.
Same company, yep.
So is it affected by the ban? Are they supposed to turn off Lemonade as well? I know that a lot of creators are suggesting Lemonade, set up an account on Lemonade and go find me there, which could be risky if, on the 19th or after the 19th, whoops, that one doesn't work either. The one that I just heard about yesterday, honestly, for the very first time, and it's gotten a lot of traction in the last 24 hours, is something called RedNote. RedNote is a completely different Chinese-owned company, which I find just wonderfully ironic. I've got a link to at least a Reuters article that's talking about, over 500,000 TikTok refugees have flocked to China's RedNote. If you actually go visit RedNote, I have not installed the app yet. I'm kind of undecided. But you can at least, visit the website, which is not RedNote. It's xiaohongshu.com, as always, links in the show notes. And yes, it's, lots of Chinese. I mean, by that, not Chinese people. I mean, lots of Chinese text flying by. The captions are in Chinese. Everything is there. And I'm not sure exactly how that's going to change over time. I read this morning that they're actually having some interesting growth pains. The growth was unexpected for RedNote. So I was expecting to hear server-related issues, capacity-related issues, but in fact, what I'm hearing about are translation-related issues.
Oh, sure, yeah.
They're trying to figure out a way to handle the influx of English speakers and not and basically have it be something that English and Chinese speakers can both enjoy together with some kind of translation or automatic stuff or whatever. Anyway, given the government's attempt to prevent their nominal risk here was, some kind of security risk posed by Chinese ownership. It is very ironic that so many people are simply just fleeing to another company that is not affected by the ban that just also happens to be owned by, a Chinese company. I have played a little bit with a VPN, and all it really takes, like for me, is I just VPN out of Canada, and everything seems to work just fine. I'm using Proton VPN. I'm a paid subscriber, so I'm actually getting, performance. I suspect that free VPNs, besides having the random security and privacy issues, they're just not going to have the performance, especially if a lot of people try to fire up VPNs to make this happen. However, I also don't expect a lot of VPN usage. I don't expect, given the massive audience that TikTok has, I really don't expect them to, that large a number of people to actually start firing up VPNs in order to get around this to really have a significant impact on what's going on. The most wonderful rumor I
Well, I don't know
heard
if I call it
lately.
wonderful, but yeah.
Oh, it's it. Well, yes. There's a rumor, of course, that the folks at ByteDance would be willing to sell, which is actually it's not a ban as much as it is a deadline to be sold. Right, you're supposed to sell the company to an American holder, and then everything would be fine. Not happening. So the risk, the rumor, of course, is that they're going to sell to Elon Musk, which, again, TikTok, ByteDance says that's pure fiction. But of course, because of the enormity of what that could potentially turn out to be, it's gotten a lot of traction, a lot of press. My only thinking is that if that happens, I'm not sure that's actually going to satisfy or make the TikTok audience all that happy. Because if Musk does to TikTok what he did to X, rather than leaving because it ain't working anymore, people are going to leave because it ain't what it used to be. It'll have been changed dramatically into something that they probably don't enjoy. Anyway, I found that an interesting rumor. I don't give it much credibility at all, especially since supposedly ByteDance has emphatically said that it's fiction. But I just thought it was funny, if nothing
There is
else.
that other rumor about like what one of the Shark Tank people or whatever
Oh, I hadn't heard that one.
with a group of investors. So not like a
Right.
real, just like one, a whole group of American investors buying it that seem to be a little bit more legitimate, as in that, they may think that they're interested. But I
Right.
haven't heard anything about, ByteDance has always been like, we're not selling. That's been their line straight through. They have never, so I doubt they're talking to anybody for real about this. They want to see how it plays out. If they get banned or not.
It'll be interesting to see what happens. It really will, because if they do get banned, like I said, it affects a lot of people. It's got to be a not insignificant chunk of ByteDance's traffic and revenue and all that kind of stuff. So I just honestly, I don't see how anybody wins. ByteDance doesn't win because they lose their audience. TikTok users don't win because they lose their ability to have fun for those people that are just using it and make revenue, have a job, have a career for those people that are actually doing that. And honestly, I don't think the government is going to end up getting what it is they think they're getting,
I don't
because
think they
this,
know what they want out of this,
well, it's, my take, of course, is that it's not so much about security as it is about political maneuvering and posturing, yada,
Yes.
yada. But nominally, it's about security. And when everybody flocks to a different Chinese app, you gained zero, right? You got nothing. So yeah, we'll
Maybe
see.
even worse. I think, well, one of the reasons I say I don't think the government really knows is, of course, people outside of government, when talking about the ban, especially if they're in favor of it, usually say they're in favor of it for reasons that have nothing to do with the legislation, right? Say, oh, it's polluting the minds of our youth or whatever. And it's like the legislation doesn't really talk about that. That's not why it's being banned. But what I've also seen people like in Congress, like being asked for a soundbite on the news. And they also state kind of the same things, where it's like, well, that's not what the legislation is about. Like, if you want it banned for that, fine, but that's not why it would be banned if this ban goes through. So sometimes I think that there are a lot of people in government that are in favor of the ban for reasons that have nothing to do with what's on the actual piece of paper, the bill that they passed, which is fine, but that just means that people are, at odds with, what one congressperson might say they want to ban for this, another congressperson for that.
The problem to me too is that if they really are interested in banning it because it's corrupting our youth or whatever the popular phrase is, then banning TikTok does not solve that problem.
There's plenty of other American companies that are doing worse.
Any other American companies that are doing worse. And of course, one of the pieces of feedback I get from some of my readers is that okay, supposedly we're banning it because China's collecting data. But it's okay if Facebook and Meta and Google and Microsoft all collect that same data and more. It's just, yeah, it's an interesting mess.
Yeah, and what data exactly? I mean, because it's unlike a social network. I feel like a social network like Facebook is very personal. You're posting about what you're doing, what's going on in your life, things that identify you and, your interests, all of that stuff. Whereas TikTok is much more of a performance platform. It's like I just don't see people that often going and saying, let me update you what's going on with my life, kind of thing. Maybe celebrities do that, but celebrities, we already know, we can read, tabloids and watch TMZ and see what celebrities are doing. What normal people do is they find a niche usually. I like to talk about new music. I like to talk about, TV shows. I talk about astronomy. I all this stuff, and they
I
find
talk
their
about
niche.
Windows.
And they talk about their niche. It's a performance thing. It's like my channel, it's going to have my name on it, but I'm going to be about this, which is makes it very different than Facebook, and also very hard to see like what sort of data like people get, especially considering that most of the data on TikTok, it doesn't really have a very deep profile kind of situation going on where, like a Facebook kind of social media thing does. TikTok, it's all like it's out there. The information that they could be looking at is stuff that's we could be looking at. Like you could go onto TikTok, follow somebody, go through all their videos, and see all the stuff that they say.
There is a piece of data that TikTok collects, that you and I can't get access to,
Yeah.
that honestly, I don't think most of our politicians are, I don't want to say smart enough, but in tune enough to understand. Remember that TikTok is all about the algorithm, right? What do? They feed you more videos like the videos you like, and with occasionally interjecting something else as kind of a, I think of it as a probe. Is
Yeah,
this
just
something? Is this something that he likes? It's completely out of left field, but is this something that he likes? And if he does, then okay, we can add that to the mix as well. So one of the things we don't have access to that TikTok does is understanding their
Yeah,
viewers'
true.
preferences, what it is they, what it is they follow, which a lot of people tend to take as affinity. Like, for example, if I were to watch a lot of, I don't know, Mac videos, for example, then TikTok might think I'm a huge Mac fan, whether or not I really am. But that's the kind of inference that they might make. The government doesn't necessarily like that. But what they also don't like is the ability of TikTok to insert random
Yes.
things in their algorithm to get your attention, where
Yeah.
those random things could potentially be directed by an enemy government. A government that we don't trust,
Right,
who may,
influencing
who we,
us.
yes, the yeah, there's influencers and then there's influencers, right? There's the
Yeah.
influencers who are watching, and then there's the platform itself who might subtly be trying to influence us by some of the random things they show us.
And it's and I think this is the real danger, except of course it still has the thing where like other apps can certainly do this as well. But the idea that not only could they insert stuff to try to influence us, propaganda, that's what it would be, right? But they don't have to make the propaganda, which is what's interesting about when you have enough content being made, whether it's TikTok or YouTube or whatever, they could just basically say, we don't need to make any propaganda at all. We just need to make sure that the people saying the things that we like have a slight, we'll turn the dial up just a notch on those people. And we can kind of like over years push, you know, things in this direction or that direction. I don't know if how well it works, really. I mean, because historically, you've got the problem where very overt propaganda has not worked, right? I mean, there's been, I mean, we could point, you know, I went to journalism school and we certainly talked about, you know, history and propaganda was one of the things we talked about. And the interesting thing about a lot of the examples of propaganda is like, yeah, so like Germany didn't win the war. The Soviet Union doesn't exist anymore. Like, you know, looking at things like that, it's like, so how good was the propaganda? So you have that. I think part of it is because you have backlash. Whenever you push propaganda enough, people recognize it and then start to counter the propaganda because that's kind of interesting. I don't know. And I certainly have heard politicians talking about this, and I don't know if that's part of the bill, if that's actually in there, saying that this is one of the reasons, or it's all about privacy. I did years and years and years and years ago, maybe way before they even, you know, during, you know, eight years ago, whenever it was, when they first mentioned banning TikTok or something. I remember this one privacy thing where they said that troops stationed in Afghanistan were using TikTok because they had a lot of downtime, right? You know, that's military, right? You spend a lot of time at the base, months and months, and then all of a sudden, one morning, you're said, we're going here, we're doing this. And so, what was interesting is they found that they were using TikTok, watching it a lot to pass the time, making TikToks a lot to pass the time. And then they'd be told, tomorrow, we're doing something, everybody off your phones. So, all of a sudden, you'd have, you know, a group of several hundred people that were on either TikTok or Snapchat or Facebook or whatever, who were posting and watching stuff every day, go quiet. And it would be like, oh, they're moving out tomorrow.
They all go dark at the same time. Something must
Yeah,
be happening.
exactly. So that's kind of interesting. But of course, you don't need a ban for that. You need a ban in the military for that, or you need a ban, you know, in, you know, that kind of thing. Of course, you can also use it for counterintelligence, you know, just, tell everybody, yeah, keep posting. Get a lot of stuff ready to post and keep posting even while you're on the road. and make it seem like we're that. But yeah, the influence stuff is interesting, and it's the best argument for actually banning it.
To be fair,
But
I'm not sure I agree, because only because now
yeah.
I can't say I've seen a single thing that I would consider to be influence in one
Well,
direction or another.
it's because you and I aren't on the edge, right? Because when you want to do propaganda, you're not going to, there's going to be people on one side or the other that you're not going to affect. You want to get the people that are in the middle or who are, you can kind of slowly, they're more malleable, right?
I was going to say, I must not be malleable enough then in their eyes.
And you don't care about the people that you like. You don't even, matter of fact, you'd rather the people that are really in the know and really feel strongly not see any of the propaganda. But the people that are kind of open to influence, only they see it. But again, I'm not convinced that a ban is actually targeted for that. Plus, of course, there's nothing to prevent people from using American companies from doing that. Matter of fact, that's exactly what's happened with Facebook, and there's
Supposedly, the
been.
Russian influence campaign during the previous election was all part of that. It was an external country using the United States hosted or centered social media.
Yeah, exactly. And there was that, what, the British ad company that used Facebook for political influence. It was a whole thing like 8 years
Don't
ago.
remember that. Yeah, I don't remember that. But yeah, believe it.
There's a lot of that.
So,
Well, what I'm interested in, and I know you want to talk about it, is like, it goes dead in the United States. Like, I'm super curious as to like what TikTok's going to be like
yes. Yeah. Oh, so
after that.
you ever have those situations where you're with a group of people and you're having a conversation, and then that one person leaves, that one annoying person leaves. And then everybody that's left finally gets to say, okay, finally, he's gone. We can be ourselves, right? Is that what's going to happen, right? Are all these
Maybe.
TikTokers from other countries going to say, boy, I'm sure glad that ugly American is gone, right? We can now finally be ourselves. I don't know.
I'm curious. I know this is something. This is probably what's going to get me to use a VPN. I'll probably be able to make it a few days, but I'm going to be so curious. And I do follow tons of people on TikTok that are like, particularly from, Scotland, Ireland, England, and also people that are like travelers that travel around the world and they do travel kind of things. And it's funny because when I see some of them talking, they're the ones not mentioning this as much because, of course, it's not affecting them. They're going to
It is
keep going. I mean, it will, their audience,
right,
but
and I suspect that some of them don't care, right? Some of them say, the folks that aren't making money, or the folks that are literally just doing it because it's a passion project, they're going to do it no matter who's watching. And if everybody in the United States goes away, it's like, oh well, I'm not going to do anything about it. I'm not going to go take the extra effort to get on another platform. I'm just going to keep doing my thing here on TikTok. I expect there's more than a few of those.
I know I'm going to be so tempted, like just to take one device, an old iPad, and just lock that in with a VPN, set it to look like it's from Canada, and go on and just see what the vibe is, what the feeling is. My guess is that I would see a lot of UK and Ireland content that would continue on, and then that would probably be kind of interesting. It would become like when you remember that you could tune into internet like streams for radio stations around the world. Like every once in a while, I remember that and say, let me go and pick like some random country in the world and like see what the rock station is playing
What
right
they're
now.
listening to, yes.
And then you listen to it for like an hour or two. I suspect it'll be even better than that. I'm also interested. It's weird watching those goodbye videos like you were talking about before. Well, first of all, there's the goodbye videos, and then there's the what people are calling the last TikTok meme, which is saying goodbye to your Chinese,
Oh, I
listener.
haven't seen that one.
So people's, saying goodbye. Oh, to whoever's been watching my TikToks in the Chinese government, it's like, sorry, you won't be able to see my stuff anymore. But also, like, there are a lot of people saying, yeah, like you said, go to Lemonade, go to Red Note, go to Instagram or whatever. I'm hearing things all over the place. There's certainly one thing about Instagram that I find interesting that several people have said is like, forget Instagram Reels, because Instagram Reels content is mostly people from TikTok also posting Instagram Reels. So the question is will people then adopt Instagram Reels as their primary place, or because they stop posting a TikTok, the Instagram Reel stuff is just going to dry up, which will be interesting. And it might be true of YouTube Shorts as well. We'll have to see. There might actually not be more stuff posted in those two places, but less stuff. So that's going to be really curious. I've seen some companies that are on the verge of this year of launching something that could be a little TikTok-like, and they're desperately telling people, look for us later on. Like, we're going to have a beta. Sign up for our beta list. And that's interesting. I can't believe that since we've had so much warning, it's really been 8 years since the original call for a ban of TikTok came out, and more than a year since this legislation really started pushing it forward. That some company, like how Meta did Threads after people wanted to leave the artist formerly known as Twitter, they came up with Threads really fast. Like, I'm so surprised that some company didn't say, hey, we've got something that could be a TikTok competitor, but we're going to go in a different direction because we don't think we could compete with TikTok. But now we have the servers, we have the app, we could push it back in the TikTok direction. Let's get it launched before TikTok ends. And that hasn't happened. It's all like I've read a lot of articles like you have. And it's all been like, here's another one, but it's more text-based, or but the videos are shorter, or but the, it's not exactly that. And it's like, well, TikTok's a pretty simple concept if you forget about the fact that they've got an algorithm that supposedly is really good, right? If you forget the algorithm and say the algorithm can catch up later, like you could work the next year to fix the algorithm to get it to be better and better. The basics of just being able to post video and being able to watch, the streams of video should be pretty basic. And I'm surprised nobody really jumped on it to try to like really just go head to head with like the absence of TikTok, I guess.
It's
Anyway.
interesting because one of the things that I think the whole Twitter migration is actually a relatively good example. Now, obviously, Twitter didn't go away, although some would claim that original Twitter went away. But there have been so many different places for people to go. And as bad as so many people feel that Twitter is or what it became, there's a lot of people still there. I don't know what it takes for people to actually migrate somewhere else. It usually takes something big, right? A big event of some sort. And then you get a surge, but it's not the whole platform. It's not the majority of users, mostly. And they tend to go to a bunch of different places. When you think about it, there's a lot of things that are pretty much Twitter. Blue Sky is probably the closest thing to what Twitter used to be. And while that's seen an uptick, it's certainly not seen as a Twitter replacement yet. And I just don't know that that's going to happen. But my concern here is that even if somebody did come up with a TikTok clone, which is essentially what you're talking about, would people move? What's the
This is new territory. Like the Twitter thing was this, okay, it's still there. You don't have to leave, right? And you have this big silent majority, right? You have people that are very vocal, people that do podcasts like us and stuff talking about it. And we're like, there's like a 10% like of us, and 10% are going to leave Twitter and 10 whatever. And then there's going to be these people that just quietly just continue doing what they were doing, right? And they're slow to move. And the mass of people are going to be slow to change their habits. This is different because, as far as US users anyway, TikTok goes away.
But for the last 8 years, nobody really believed it would happen.
I know. So what happens when it does?
I know, I get that. I mean, yes,
It's going to
I
be.
don't know where people are going to go. It'll be really interesting to see which services have the uptick come next week if it happens. But I think to address your original statement is, why isn't there an alternative? Why didn't somebody do something? Because they probably didn't think the opportunity was real. They probably didn't
Yeah, it's a
believe that
risk.
this we would actually come to this point. And you're right, they would be risking investing in creating a TikTok clone only to find out then that TikTok wasn't going away and they don't have a way to differentiate themselves.
Yeah, that's true. So,
Yep.
yeah, so speaking of migrations,
Let's.
TikTok's not the only thing where there's like this big migration happening. It seems
Right.
to be that's like the big story going on over the last couple of months, maybe even going back a year, but certainly in the last couple of months, this migration throughout either social media or regular media between places. And it really got a push in the last week or two with Facebook's announcements and things about how they're changing how moderation works. A lot of people very upset about that, including myself, taking away fact checking. Meta, of course, owns a whole suite of things. It's not just Facebook, it's Instagram, it's Threads, and other things as well. But those are the two big ones where fact checking really comes in to play there. I'm really only using Threads now, but I don't know if I'll be continuing to use Threads. Very upset about what they're doing. So there's been a lot of talk separate from the TikTok stuff of migration away from Instagram, away from Threads and Facebook. Of course, there's been talk about getting away from Facebook for a decade now. But to other things like, for instance, Blue Sky and Mastodon for the microblogging, going from Threads to those. There's been a lot, seems to be a lot of talk over the last couple of days about Pixel Fed as an
Right.
alternative to Instagram. It's kind of like the Mastodon, I guess,
It's the
compared to
Mastodon of image-based,
of
yeah.
image-based stuff. You could continue with your Instagram ways of posting photos if that's what you use it for, but it's federated and you can create your own instance if you want. You can join a bunch of others. So it's really interesting to see that. Then also in like regular media, right? The big story there being the Washington Post, starting with Jeff Bezos, the owner of the Washington Post, going in and stopping the endorsement for the presidential election at the
Right.
last minute, right? When they already had the endorsement set, ready to go to print, he stopped it, and that made a lot of people mad inside the Post and outside the Post. So outside the Post, you got people saying, "Forget it, I'm done with my subscription." Inside the Post, you had people resigning and leaving, right, and going to various other places, starting various other places. So there's like this migration away from traditional media sources that are all now online, really, but they're still traditional. They have writers that write stuff and they publish it. It's not like a social media or microblogging platform, and other places too. People getting away from this or that, or figure out who owns what and trying to stay away from that platform. So yeah, it's been really interesting. Even messaging apps, I've heard people talking about like getting away from either traditional messaging, like using their mobile carrier, or things like WhatsApp, going with things like Telegram for more privacy and all of that. There's
It's
that kind of
interesting because
migration.
WhatsApp is another one that goes under the Meta umbrella, right? Which
Yeah.
is, another big thing. Telegram tends to be a little bit controversial. There are some
Yeah.
folks that don't believe it's everything it's cracked up to be. Everybody says you should be using Signal if you really want privacy.
Okay, yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. There just seems to be migration all over the place and diversification, because a lot of this migration is going away from bigger things to smaller things, like going away from Instagram to Pixel Fed, which by itself would be a whole bunch of smaller servers and services. But also, I've heard people recommending others, or even going back to Flickr. Like I've heard people say, "I'm just going back to Flickr, away from
I never
Instagram."
left Flickr. I've been there forever. Come on.
Yeah. So, and there are a bunch of other photo sharing ones as well. And I've heard so, boy, people are migrating all over the place. Even some of those, a lot of journalists have basically moved away from working for publication to working for themselves, and they moved to things like going to Substack, for instance, where they could continue to write about what they want to write about, and then just get paid directly by the people that read them. And some of them set up their own things, Some of them are setting up Substack. Some of them, I suspect, are using Substack as their launching platform, but the plan is to get off of it eventually
Oh,
and
right, sure.
have their own thing. But it is interesting where I've even noticed too that as far as monetization, some of the publications I'm used to going to, like The Verge and Wired, like, I mean, they've had ways to pay them for things for a long time, but now I'm hitting like the limits all the time. Like, I don't remember ever going to The Verge and getting told that, oh, you hit your limit, subscribe. And the same thing with Wired Online. Fortunately, I can get both through Apple News Plus.
Oh, okay. So
But so
you, in a sense, you are paying for
I
them.
am paying, which makes it tough because I have to remember that, because I have to be like, well, I find this valuable, maybe I'll pay. Oh, wait a minute, I think I already am. But now every time I
So,
see an article, I have to go to Apple News Plus and find the article there.
oh, so you actually have to, you can't just use some credentials on the website. You have to actually do it
Yeah,
through
as far
Apple
as
News
I can
Plus.
tell. I mean, there might be an easier way to do it, but yeah, it's a pain. What I need to do is remember at this point, which is exactly, what Apple wants with the app, is I remember, oh, if I'm going to read news, stop searching the web.
Right.
Go to Apple News Plus in the first place. And maybe that's part of the problem. Maybe I'm doing that and I'm not realizing I'm seeing some things that I'm paying for. And then when I go to the web, then I'm reminded that it's like, oh yeah, you just can't read this.
As an aside, I would love to subscribe to Apple News Plus. I think it covers enough of the publications that I care about that I would actually end up saving money in the long run. I'll talk about my shift here in a minute, but the issue is, of course, that it's Apple only. There's no web interface. If there was a web interface, I swear, especially in the current climate, they could double their revenue, double their subscribers in an instant by making it available to non-Apple users. Yes, I have an iPad, but I don't have it with me all the time, and it's not the kind of a thing that I just generally go to do things. So, yeah, Apple News Plus would be wonderful if.
Maybe this shift in things will get them going there. We'll have to see. I mean, they certainly did it with Apple TV Plus, right? They started off with you need an Apple device to do it. And now you get the Apple TV Plus, for instance, on Roku. And so you don't have to buy Apple hardware anymore. You could just get a Roku box
As I
and
do. Yes. That's exactly. I want that same experience for Apple News.
So maybe they will now. Maybe it will become more viable. Certainly, it's become more valuable to me. I really only had Apple News Plus for a while there because it just came with my Apple One subscription, which included Apple Arcade and Apple TV Plus and things I used. But now it's to the point where I use it enough that I think I would pay for, like, if it was separate and I had to pay $5 a month or whatever, I probably would.
So Washington Post is interesting. There's the most recent thing, of course, that happened is that editorial cartoon got
Yes, that's right.
pulled at the last minute. And that person, the artist behind that one, whose name escapes me right now, but she actually already had a Substack. And I'm absolutely convinced that her Substack subscribers just went through the roof as everybody heard more about this. This was a wonderful classic case of the Streisand effect, right? I suspect that had they just allowed that thing to get published normally, it would have gotten some eyeballs and it would have raised a few eyebrows, but it would not have gotten nearly the coverage
It
that it ended up
wasn't a
getting
yeah, it
later.
wasn't a very controversial editorial cartoon, in my opinion.
It was just another one. We've seen plenty of them. But she's obviously gone off and done a Substack of her own, and I don't know if she's making revenue enough there or not. But one of the things that is happening, so a couple of different things on Washington Post. You've mentioned, of course, in your notes here that people are going to other publications that some of which I have already subscribed to, like The Atlantic. I love The Atlantic. It's one of those. It's like top tier for me. If I could subscribe to only one thing, it would probably be The Atlantic. The Economist, I think, would be a close second. But what I've been doing is I have been migrating my subscriptions. Indeed, I did cancel my Washington Post subscription, which really only means that come October, as it turns out, it's not going to auto renew. And I've done the same thing actually with the New York Times, because the New York Times is falling into some other issues that people aren't trusting them as a reputable, proper news source. What I've been doing is I've been shifting some of my subscription dollars to other publications. I just like yesterday ended up subscribing to the New Yorker because they had a wonderful article about something that, okay, yeah, if they're going to do more stuff like this, I will support them. But I'm also doing the individual thing. I've got probably about half a dozen individuals that I've subscribed through, usually through Substack, although there are alternatives that kind of operate like Substack to varying degrees. And it's as you say, it's kind of a migration from corporate journalism, which is, we would think of as Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, and so forth, to individual journalism, because now individual journalism is a thing. It didn't used to be, right? You needed the machine of a big corporation to get your words distributed. But now all you really need to do is set up something on the internet. And as long as you can attract the appropriate attention and get subscribers, you're done. You're ready. You're making your mark in the world. So I've been doing a lot of that as well, and really, really rethinking where I'm spending spending my subscription dollars. The one thing I found kind of interesting is that I don't know if you know who Kara Swisher is.
Oh yeah,
She's,
well, I recommended her book on
oh,
an
that's right.
episode of
Yes,
this very
she
show
did.
not too long ago.
Well, apparently she is spearheading a movement to try and purchase the Washington Post. She's trying to gather investors to come up with, whatever the appropriate amount of money would be to do that. Personally, I think it's doomed. No matter how much money they raise, because it's clear that Bezos isn't interested in selling. And even if he were, the fact that he has apparently basically gone all in on the next administration won't want him to sell. Because they want to be able to control what goes out in that publication, albeit through him, right? So I just don't see that as happening, which is unfortunate. I just don't see another way around it.
Yeah, I think I mean, it is interesting, you know, the billionaires controlling the media stuff. The funny thing is, of course, that the Atlantic is
Yes.
owned by a company who is led by Lorraine Powell Jobs, another billionaire, right? So interesting how like yeah, there are publications like that. So there's, you know, the individuals trying to do things, and then there's the individual like just doing a Substack, which is, it's amazing. I mean, I got my journalism degree in 1994, and if I would have suggested to somebody then that it's like, yeah, I want to write about this and this, and I'm just going to do it on my own. Like, I'm not going to get a job somewhere doing it. I'm going to do it. They'd be like, oh, you're going to start a newspaper or magazine? No, I'm not going to start a newspaper or magazine. I'm just going to write articles. And that's it. That would have been crazy, and how that's changed. But also, if you look at the history of journalism, you know, you went from a period in the 20th century where you had so many newspapers. Like small cities would have like four newspapers competing with each other, like daily newspapers. You know, all big cities had multiple big newspapers, and then slowly those went away. And you got to an era, you know, in the 90s, you started to have this thing where big cities could only support one newspaper, and you had these newspapers merging like crazy until every city has its own newspaper. And then you have today where those newspapers, for the most part, still exist, but they struggle. Like they went from having like multiple buildings with like printing staff and machines and like huge staff of like advertising executives and stuff to like having like a floor of an office building where they have a few journalists and editors and everything else is outsourced and all that.
The other thing is that a lot of those daily newspapers, city newspapers, they're not independent anymore.
No, yeah,
They're
they're owned
all
by.
part of these huge corporations that, yeah,
Yes.
they own newspapers
There's
here,
like
here,
three or
here,
four
here.
of them.
Yeah,
Three or
and
four of them own like 80% of all the newspapers, something like that.
we're very fortunate in Seattle in that the Seattle Times is not owned by one of the big corporations. But you don't have to go very far, either north or south in the state. And the very next paper, the very next city that comes up that has a big enough newspaper, yep, it's owned by a national corporation. It's frustrating, but it's the change in the business
It's a
model.
change, but now things are changing in a weird way, in an
Yes.
unpredictable way, where you went from everything consolidating and getting smaller to now if journalists can just go off and start their own blog. It really is a blog, but that's an old-fashioned term already. But they start their own thing, and then people will pay them because it doesn't take a lot of people to support one. You and I should know, right? Because with basically what we're doing, we're both tech journalists. We both have our niche. We have our small set of supporters that wouldn't be even on the radar of any, newspaper size kind of organization. But we're able to do that, and it's interesting. So you went from lots of news organizations to a few news organizations, but back to a lot, but they're just individuals.
Right,
And
right.
so it's, yeah, the continuing evolution of media, really. And media is a really ties it all together, everything we've been talking about, because you've got the people that are writing, you got the people that are making, producing videos, and but you also have the people just live streaming, TikToks as it is, because every individual on TikTok was basically their own little one person media company.
Right.
That was replacing what we would see on TV, like produced by a big corporation, owned by like a even bigger corporation, and then broadcast at 6 p.m. on, in your on your local station or whatever, your affiliate. Now it's like, no, I'm just going to watch TikTok or whatever comes next and
There are a
just see these individuals that made it with just their phone.
couple of things you said that I wanted to react to. One is you called me a journalist, and while I appreciate the compliment, I have been very I try really hard to never think that I am because I don't have the background. I don't have the degree. I don't have the and that but that's actually representative of what I think a lot of people are struggling with right now. Is a lot of people who are out there generating news, right? Writing up articles, blogs, whatever. They're also not journalists, right? They don't have that same background. So they don't bring to it the tools that you, for example, would because of the journalism background.
Yeah, I disagree though. I think because if you go back 30 years and you look at a newspaper and a newspaper says, we want to have somebody write a tech column, right? They may have done the wrong thing and found a journalist that knew a little bit about technology but could
Which
write,
I know
which
several.
happened. But they may have done the right thing and said, let's find somebody in tech, knows what they're talking about, but they do have the ability to communicate, right?
Right, but they're doing that within a framework of an organization that can, for lack of a better term, apply the journalism to what they produce, right? Whereas I'm sitting here at my desk writing stuff. And it's about tech. It's the stuff that I know. It's the stuff that I love. And while I understand journalistic principles, it's not something that I can honestly say I consider myself to be. And like I said, that's just me. The point here really is that a lot of people are just out there spewing, right? Some of it's good. Some of it's really good. Some of it isn't. And it's not, they may think of themselves as journalists. Because they've got a blog, right? But they're not. The other thing I was going to mention is that one of the journalists that I follow, a true journalist, has the pedigree, is Joan Westenberg, and I believe she's down in Australia. She's had a blog for a long time with a lot of really good thought pieces. She's one of those that shows up fairly regularly for me in 7 Takeaways every week. But she's actually starting a news publication, an actual news thing, I guess you'd call it. I'm not really even sure what the right term for it anymore. It's called The Index. It's theindex.media. And it is intended to be a source of news, not just her writing in her blog, writing her opinions and her thought pieces, but actual news. I find it interesting that an individual is attempting to do something like that. I'm hoping, I guess, that it's a long game, that eventually maybe there'll be other revenue, other players, that this thing will grow. But I just find it interesting that an individual is now thinking in that way.
Yep, I think well, I think that kind of sums up all this stuff, going from, going from big companies to individuals, and as for the media makers and also the consumers, everything's in flux now. It's a
No
really going to
kidding.
be a really interesting year. I really have no idea at the end of 2025 where we're going to be in this landscape. It could go in a lot of different directions. I don't think it'll go too far, right? I don't think it's going to move super fast, but I think it's going to be something definitely worth watching, which is not something I could have said for every year. Go back like 10 years ago, it's like, whoa, is the media landscape going to change this year? Probably not. Maybe a little. Maybe it'll
There's
move. This
another
year's big.
factor that we have not mentioned that is also at play here that we've been mentioning every other week on our podcast, and that is AI. AI is probably going to be another spoon that's stirring the pot of what media turns out to be in the next 12 months.
Indeed. Well, we could talk more about that next week, maybe. So what did you find was cool this week?
As it turns out, I had something selected and then somebody else beat me to it. So last night we ended up just, I don't know if it's on a lark or what, but we ended up watching American Primeval. It's on Netflix and it is a Western during the time of the migration of a lot of people into Utah. I'm finding it fascinating. I will say that it's very violent. Presumably, I guess, as those days were, but it's just it's an interesting story. In theory, it's about a woman and her son who are traveling westward to meet up with her husband, but there's clearly a backstory that we haven't been told yet, and a lot of the individuals and organizations that they meet along the way. So anyway, and what the other thing that's interesting is they're going for reality in the sense that there's a big Indian presence, their Native American presence, and they are speaking in
Oh, it's
Shoshone,
yeah, you don't really hear that very often in
right,
Westerns.
with of course captions. I just find that fascinating to listen to. It's very interesting to me that when
I
they
might
do
have to
that.
give that a look. Mine is a cure for all that ails us. That's going on in the world today is right in the middle of all of this. Everything going on is one big bright spot, and that is there's a new Wallace and Gromit movie.
Yay.
It's on Netflix. I love Wallace and Gromit, and this did not disappoint. We put it on. I started smiling, and I smiled like and laughed through the entire movie. It was great stuff.
We did the same thing. We ended up watching it last week, I think it was, and same thing. It was
I was like, oh yes, oh, something to be happy about.
It's funny because between the two of us right now, I think we've both defined the two extremes of what can happen on Netflix.
Really. Wallace and Gromit versus American Primeval.
In terms of promoting our own stuff, I want to point people at an article called Yet Another Way to Install Windows 11 Without a TPM. TPM, the Trusted Platform Module, is this new hardware requirement that Windows 11 has that is intended to increase security or improve security by handling some in hardware, some of the things that were traditionally handled in software. Like it's supposedly it's a more secure place to store your encryption keys if you're doing like BitLocker whole disk encryption. However, it's also extremely controversial. It's certainly gotten the conspiracy theory crowd out saying that, well, Microsoft is just doing this to force us all to purchase new machines. Which, of course, I don't buy into. As it turns out, there have been a series of ways to install Windows 11 bypassing that requirement. They've gotten progressively more, I don't want to say more complicated, but at least different. And this is, as the title implies yet another way, since the other ways that I've been using in the past have been getting whack-a-moled by Microsoft. So that's yet another way to install Windows 11 without a TPM. It's askleo.com/177093.
Cool. And I'll link to my latest video. When Apple came out with iOS 18, they had a redesign of how the Photos app works. Basically, instead of having all these pages of things to look through, it's just one long screen. You can scroll up and down and find everything. When I first saw it, I was like, oh, this is neat. Not a really a big change, but it certainly makes things a lot easier and simpler to describe. And I was shocked when a lot of people said, oh, this is horrible. I was like, why? It's all st there, nothing's changed. And there are a lot of people saying, my, this is gone or that is gone. It's like nothing is gone. Everything is still there. They've just organized it in a big list. I think people coming to the app fresh will have no problem using it. I think if you use it every day and we're used to all this, then it's a change. And so I eventually got around to doing a video that basically explains, look, it's just one long list. Everything's still there. Everything's easy to get to. Take 5 minutes to get yourself used to it, and you won't think about it ever again.
You'll be fine.
You'll be fine.
It's funny because that reminds me. I've had an article on Ask Leo. Should I upgrade to Windows 11 from Windows 10 to Windows 11, which suffers from a lot of the same misconceptions, right? I just updated it the other day because the deadline's looming closer. But what you said about photos just resonated a lot. It's like, okay, yes, things are rearranged a little bit. It's all still there. You'll be fine.
You'll be fine. Yeah, we should change the name of our shows to You'll Be
You'll
Fine.
be fine. Anyway,
Okay.
you'll be fine for another week. I think that pretty much wraps us up for this one.
Yep.
As always, thank you for listening and for being here, and we will see you again real soon. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The show notes for this week are at tehpodcast.com/teh239. If you have a comment or question for us, be sure to leave it on the show notes page. The TEH podcast is hosted by Leo Notenboom of AskLeo.com and Gary Rosenzweig of MacMost.com and edited by Connie Delaney. I'm your synthetic announcer, Adam, from 11labs.com. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you here real soon.